decorated with colored Christmas lights. A taxi pulls to the curb. Michael's shadowy figure emerges. He stops, looks around, then climbs the empty steps to the hospital entrance. Inside, Michael enters an empty, dimly lit corridor. In a bright adjacent room, a sink is filled with dirty dishes. A lamp shines on a typewriter that holds a page of paper. Michael turns away and walks faster down the dingy corridor, which is empty except for a visitor's bench and a gurney. He enters an empty lounge with a Christmas tree and a spinning phonograph. A partially eaten sandwich lies on a nearby desktop next to a cup of black coffee. Michael runs the entire length of the corridor. At the end of it, he climbs a flight of stairs to a short hallway of rooms. Upstairs, he spots two empty chairs in front of a closed door and stalks toward them. A closer view of Michael in front of the room. He glances up haltingly to check the nameplate. From behind him, we see the door open gradually to reveal a bed, the hanging IV tubes, and the figure of Don Corleone lying safely asleep. An unbelieving Michael tiptoes to his side.
What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here now.
I'm Michael Corleone. This is my father. There's nobody here. What happened to the guards?
Your father just had too many visitors. They interfered with hospital service. The police made them leave about 10 minutes ago.
The nurse pointedly checks her watch. Michael grabs the phone.
Get me a Long Beach 45620, please. Nurse, wait a minute. Stay here. Sonny, Michael, I'm at the hospital. Listen, I got here late. There's nobody here. Nobody. No Tessio's men, no detectives, nobody. Papa's all alone. I won't panic.
I'm sorry, but you will have to leave.
Michael scans the walls.
You and I are going to move my father to another room. Now, can you disconnect those tubes so we can move the bed out?
That's out of the question.
You know my father. Men are coming here to kill him. You understand? Now help me, please.
A close view of his father, unconscious, a tube leading from his nose. Now from a stairwell, we see Michael and the nurse wheeling Don Corleone's bed carefully around a corner. The nurse pushes the jiggling IV pole as Michael, walking backwards, steers the bed down the hall. The nurse stops and glances fearfully over her shoulder. Michael opens a heavy door. The nurse quickly helps him navigate the bed through it and into a utility room. They pass out of view. Now a close view of the left half of Michael's face peeking through the door's window. Alternating views of the vanishing stairway, the closed door of Don Corleone's room, and the heavy door where Michael hides at the end of the corridor. From behind, we see a dark figure emerge from the shadows of the stairway. The man, wearing a black suit and fedora, walks toward the heavy door while checking nameplates against a slip of paper. A frontal view reveals a slight man with a searching look carrying a small bouquet of flowers. Michael springs out of the doorway.
Who are you? I am Enzo, the baker. Do you remember me?
Enzo.
Yes, Enzo.
You better get out of here, Enzo. There's going to be trouble.
If there is trouble, I stay here to help you. For your father, for your father.
All right, listen. Wait for me outside in front of the hospital, all right? I'll be out in a minute. Go ahead.
Okay.
Enzo retreats. Michael joins the nurse and stretcher in the back room. He leans over his resting father, just as Don Corleone's eyelids flicker.
Stay here, Bob. I'll take care of you. I'm with you now. I'm with you.
Michael gently strokes his graying hair. He squeezes his father's hand, resting his lips on it for a moment. When Michael lifts his head, his father is smiling. The corner of his baggy eye shows the glistening trail of a tear. Now, Michael strides confidently down the main hospital corridor, a close view of Enzo on the steps outside. His eyes shift in the shadows. He still holds the bouquet. Michael comes out and grabs the flowers.
Get rid of this. Come here. Put your hand in your pocket like you have a gun. You'll be all right.
Turning up Enzo's dark collar, Michael flips up his own, then quickly surveys the street.
You'll be okay.
A wide view of the hospital steps from the other side of the street. The still silhouettes of the two men barely stand out in the shadows under the arc of Christmas lights. At the side of the steps, a small pine tree blinks colorfully. A closer view of Michael as he touches Enzo's chest in warning. A long black sedan pauses at the curb. The half-lit faces of three men peer up at the hospital. Michael stares down at the car unflinchingly, then slowly unbuttons his overcoat. We see his hand crawl gradually inside the flap. Down in the car, the men jerk their heads at one another with a scowl. The car pulls away.
You did good.
He gives a partial smile, a close view of Enzo's hands fumbling to pull a cigarette from a pack. Shaking uncontrollably, he brings the cigarette to his mouth. Michael sees him scraping the flint of a lighter. Michael takes it from him and strikes up a flame. The cigarette trembles violently as Enzo lights it. Michael gives back the lighter and pats the baker on the back. Two police cars race up to the curb. Three officers shove Michael, grab him, and frisk him. Someone exits a third car. A bulldog-faced captain steps into the half-light.
I thought I got all you guinea hoods locked up. What the hell are you doing here?
What happened to the men who were guarding my father, Captain?
Why, you little punk. What the hell are you doing telling me my business? I pulled them guys off of here, eh? And you get out of here and stay away from this hospital.
I'm not moving until you put some guards around my father's room.
Bill, take him in.
Kid's clean, Captain. He's a war hero. He's never been...
God damn it, I said take him in!
What's the tech paying you to set up my father, Captain?
Take a hold of him. Stand him up. Stand him up straight.
The captain belts him in the face. The officers scramble to hold up the sagging Michael. The captain steps back with a satisfied chuckle. Michael's knees fold under him, his mouth hanging open. Another car arrives, emptying a crew of men in overcoats. Tom Hagen grabs Mike's arm.
Attorney for the Corleone family. These men are private detectives hired to protect Vito Corleone. They're licensed to carry firearms. If you interfere, you'll have to appear before a judge in the morning and show cause.
All right, let him go. Come on.
With a savagely mouthed curse, the captain waves his arm and the bodyguards rush toward the hospital. Daytime outside the Corleone gate. Two guards lower the chain. A black car unblocks the gate as another rolls into the courtyard. A disheveled Michael climbs out with Clemenza and others and notices two gunmen on a balcony. They lower their rifles and nod upon seeing him. Tessio approaches.
What's with all the new faces?
We don't need them now. After the hospital thing, Sonny got mad. We hit Bruno Tattaglia 4 o'clock this morning.
Jesus Christ.
Clemenza motions Michael toward the house. They pass a bodyguard in a leather bomber jacket.
Looks like a fortress around here.
Inside, Sonny grins.
Hamanuch! Hey! 100 button men on the street 24 hours a day. That Turk shows one hair on his ass, he's dead. Believe me.
He pats Tom's behind.
Hey, Michael, come here. Let me look at you.
Michael turns his head, showing a swollen left cheek and jaw.
You look beautiful. It's beautiful. You're gorgeous. Hey, listen to this.
The Turk. He wants to talk.
He got you. Imagine the nerve on his son of a bitch, eh?
Crops out last night. He wants a meeting today.
What'd he say?
What did he say? Bada-beep, bada-bap, bada-boop, bada-beep. He wants us to send Michael to hear the proposition. And the promise is that the deal is so good that we can't refuse, eh?
What about Bruno Tatali?
It's part of the deal. Bruno cancels out what they did to my father.
Sonny, we ought to hear what they had to say.
No. 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 No more. Not this time, Consigliere. No more meetings. No more discussions. No more Salazzo tricks. You give them one message, I want Salazzo. If not, it's all out war. We go to the
back. Some of the other families won't sit still.
No, hand me Salazzo.
Your father wouldn't want to hear this. This is business, not personal.
They shot my father. It's business.
Even the shooting of your father was business, not personal, Sonny.
Well, in business, we'll have to suffer, all right? And listen, do me a favor, Tom. No more advice on how to patch things up. Just help me win, please, all right?
Tom nods absently at a spread of food. Sonny walks around him and sits behind the Don's desk.
I found out about this Captain McCluskey who broke Mike's jaw.
What about him?
Now, he's definitely on Salazzo's payroll and for big money. See? Now, McCluskey has agreed to be the Turk's bodyguard. What you have to understand, Sonny, is that while Salazzo is being guarded like this, he is invulnerable. Now, nobody has ever gunned down a New York police captain, never. It would be disastrous. All the five families would come after you, Sonny. The Corleone family would be outcast. Even the old man's political protection would run for cover. So do me a favor. Take this into consideration.
Tom sits back and loosens his tie.
All right, wait.
Tom walks aside wearily. Michael rubs his forehead.
You can't wait. You can't wait. I don't care what Salazzo says about a deal. He's going to kill Pop. That's it. That's the key for him. Gotta get Salazzo.
Mike is right.
Well, let me ask you something, Professor. I mean, what about this McCluskey?
Huh?
What do we do with this copy?
Our view closes in on Michael, seated calmly in a leather chair.
They want to have a meeting with me, right? It will be me, McCluskey, and Salazzo. Let's set the meeting. Get our informers to find out where it's going to be held. Now, we insist it's a public place, a bar, a restaurant, some place where there's people so I feel safe. They're going to search me when I first meet them, right? So I can't have a weapon on me then. But if Clemenza can figure a way to have a weapon planted there for me,
he nods with unblinking eyes.
Then I'll kill them both.
Sonny stares at him. Clemenza and Tessio grin.
Hey, what are you going to do? Nice college boy, huh? Didn't want to get mixed up in the family business? Now you want to gun down a police captain? Why, because he slapped you in the face a little bit? Huh? What do you think, this is the army where you shoot him a mile away? You gotta get up close like this, and bada-bing, you blow their brains all over your nice Ivy League suit. Come
Sonny.
In. Mwah! You're taking this very personal. Tom, this is business, and this man is taking it very, very personal.
Where does it say that you can't kill a cop?
Come on, Mikey.
Tom, wait a minute. I'm talking about a cop that's mixed up in drugs. I'm talking about a dishonest cop. A crooked cop who got mixed up in the rackets and got what was coming to him. That's a terrific story. We have newspaper people on the payroll, don't we, Tom?
Tom nods.
They might like a story like that.
They might. They just might.
It's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business.
Now, a close view of a revolver.
It's as cold as they come. Impossible to trace, so you don't worry about prints, Mike. I put a special tape on the trigger and a butt. Here, try it.
Michael takes the small, snub-nosed .38 from Clemenza. We see only his hand as it works the taped grip of the gun. His finger starts to pull the trigger, then releases it.
What's the matter, the trigger too tight?
I don't know, my ears.
Yeah, I left it noisy. That way it scares any pain in the ass innocent bystanders away. All right, you shot them both. Now what do you do?
Down, finish my dinner.
Come on, kid, don't fool around. Just let your hands wrap to your side and let the gun slip out. Everybody will still think you got it. You're going to be staring at your face, Mike. So walk out of the place real fast, but you don't run. Don't look nobody directly in the eye, but you don't look away either. Hey, they're going to be scared stiff of you, believe me. So don't worry about nothing. You know, you're going to turn out all right. You take a long vacation, nobody knows where, and we're going to catch the hell.
How bad do you think it's going to be?
Pretty goddamn bad. Probably all the other families will line up against us. That's all right. This has got to happen every 5 years or so. 10 years. Helps to get rid of the bad blood. Been 10 years since the last one. You know, you got to stop them at the beginning. Like they should have stopped Hitler at Munich. They should never let him get away with that. They was just asking for big trouble. You know, Mike, we was all proud of you, being a hero and all. Your father, too.
Looking him in the eye, he hands Michael the pistol. Pensively, Michael slides off a countertop in the basement workshop and aims at a target. Now a close view of Sonny shoveling Chinese food into his mouth. His broad shoulders ripple under his tank top undershirt and suspenders. At the table, Clemenza, chewing, glances at his watch. Tessio and a fifth man eat gloomily. Michael holds a cigarette between his pursed, pouting lips. Sonny swigs from a bottle while his blue-suited brother sits back and rubs his forehead. Tom enters.
Nothing. Not a hint. Absolutely nothing. Even Solotso's people don't know where the meeting's going to be held.
How much time do we have?
I'll pick you up in front of Jack Dempsey's joint in an hour and a half. Exactly an hour and a half.
We could put a tail on him, it turns out.
So lots of lose our ass going around the block.
What about the negotiator?
He's over at my place playing pinochle with a couple of my men. He's happy. They're letting him win.
It's too much of a risk for Mike. Maybe we ought to call it off, Sonny.
The negotiator keeps on playing cards until Mike comes back safe and sound.
So why doesn't he just blast who's ever in the goddamn car?
It's too dangerous. They'll be looking for that.
So lots of might not even be in the car, Sonny.
I get it.
Sonny stands and walks into the Don's office with its dark wood-paneled walls. From the table, the men watch him through several doorways. In the foreground, white Chinese food cartons litter the table. Sonny slams down the phone and walks quickly toward us. He glances at Tom, then touches Mike's shoulder.
Louis' restaurant in the Bronx.
Well, is it reliable?
That's my man in McCluskey's precinct. Police captain's got to be on call 24 hours a day. He signed out at that number between 8 and 10. Anybody know this joint?
Yeah, sure, I do.
Tessio nods.
It's perfect for us. A small family place, good food, everyone minds his business. It's perfect. Pete, they got an old-fashioned toilet. You know, the box and the chain thing. We might be able to tape the gun behind it.
All right. Mike, you go to a restaurant, you eat, you talk for a while, you relax. You make them relax. Then you get up and you go take a leak. Or better still, you ask for permission to go. Then when you come back, you come out blasting. And don't take any chances. Two shots in the head apiece.
Listen, I want somebody good, and I mean very good, to plant that gun. I don't want my brother coming out of that toilet with just his dick in his hands, all right?
The gun will be there.
All right, listen. You drive him and you pick him up after the job.
Come on, let's move.
Sonny catches up to Michael in the shadows just outside the room and puts an arm around him.
Did he tell you to drop the gun right away?
Yeah, a million times.
Clemenza stops with them in the foyer.
You don't forget. Two shots apiece in the head as soon as you come out the door. Huh?
Clemenza leaves. Michael turns and raises his wide brown eyes to Sonny.
How long do you think it'll be before I can come back?
At least a year, Mike. Listen, I square with Mom. You know, you're not seeing her before you leave. And I'll get a message to that girlfriend when I think the time is right.
Michael embraces his much taller brother and kisses his neck.
Take care, huh?
He kisses Tom Hagen, then follows Tessio out. The scene dissolves to the red neon sign and facade of Jack Dempsey's restaurant. We move closer to Michael, waiting on the rain-slicked sidewalk. He wears a heavy brown overcoat and brown hat. Hands held behind his back, he shifts his feet nervously, facing the street. A black limousine with white wall tires pulls up, and Michael gets in. From the back seat, Salazzo puts a hand on his shoulder.
I'm glad you came, Mike. I hope we can straighten everything out. I mean, this is terrible. It's not the way I wanted things to go at all. It should have never happened.
I'm going to straighten everything out tonight. I don't want my father bothered anymore.
He won't be, Mike. I swear on my children he won't be. But you got to keep an open mind when we talk. I mean, I hope you're not a hothead like your brother Sonny. You can't talk business with him. You do know what I'm not.
He's a good kid.
McCluskey pats Michael's shoulders.
I'm sorry about the other night, Mike. I got a frisky, so turn around, huh? On your knees, facing me.
Michael turns completely around and kneels on the front seat.
I guess I'm getting too old for my job. Too grouchy. Can't stand the aggravation. You know who it is? He's clean.
A close view of Michael as he puts his hat back on slowly and adjusts the brim. The faintest hint of a smile crosses his lips. We see the car turn onto a ramp leading to a steel span bridge. It cruises over the treaded surface. On the right, a bridge sign dips into view. To New Jersey.
Hello, New Jersey?
Salazzo gives him a stone-cold look. The driver checks his rearview mirror. From outside, a head-on view of the car as it cuts left across the passing lane and skids into a 180-degree turn. The car climbs over the divider, pulls into the opposite lane, and cruises back toward the city. Michael looks into the back seat in disbelief. Salazzo leans forward to the driver.
Nice work, Lou.
Michael sinks a little lower in his seat and eases the hat off his forehead. Later, the car lurches down a dark, wide-open street. It stops outside a small restaurant with checkered trim and swinging doors. A red neon sign in each window reads, Louis Italian-American Restaurant. The three men get out. Now, inside the nearly empty dining room, Michael eyes Salazzo over a white linen tablecloth. McCluskey stuffs a napkin into his collar.
How's the Italian food in this restaurant?
Good. Try the veal. It's the best in the city.
I'll have it.
Salazzo glances up at the waiter.
Capit.
Biting the corner of his lip, Salazzo looks intently at Michael, who returns an unflinching stare, his lips slightly pursed. The waiter twists a corkscrew. Michael, with a tense, guarded look, watches the red wine being poured. The wide-nosed Salazzo places the first full glass in front of Michael's plate. Michael's cheek is still puffy.
I'm gonna speak Italian to Mike.
Go ahead.
Michael leans forward slowly on his forearms and clasps his hands. Salazzo waves at his mouth.
Mi dispiace.
Salazzo nods once.
Tu, hai sapere, la critica successa tra me e tuo padre fu una cosa di business. E io hai un grosso rispetto per tuo padre, ma tuo padre pensa l'antica. E tu non lo può capire che io sono un uomo di onori.
Tu magari sti così, ti saggio.
Lo sai.
The men relax a bit as a waiter arrives with a plate of food. When he's gone, Salazzo leans forward at the table.
E tu a sapere che ho aiutato la famiglia d'Italia.
A wide view of the small dining room. A manager crosses the mosaic-tiled floor. Two other tables are occupied.
Io voglio pace. E lasciamo perdere che tutti sti cazzati.
Ma voi gioca.
Yeah.
Come si dice?
Mike glances at McCluskey, who eats.
What I want, what's most important to me, is that I have a guarantee. No more attempts on my father's life.
What guarantees can I give you, Mike? I am the hunted one. I missed my chance. You think too much of me, kid. I'm not that clever. All I want is a truce.
Michael glances at a passing waiter, then turns back to him.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Salazzo glares at him.
Is that all right?
You're gonna go, you're gonna go.
Michael gets up. Salazzo puts up a hand to stop him. He runs it down Michael's jacket, then feels around his thighs.
I frisked him. He's clean.
Don't take too long. I frisked 1,000 young punks.
In the bathroom, Michael pushes through saloon-style doors to the inside of a stall. The toilet tank is mounted just above his head. He reaches up and runs his hand along the top right corner. Feeling nothing, he panics and tries the remaining sides. Out in the dining room, McCluskey, chewing, glances toward the bathroom. Now with two hands reaching behind the center of the tank, Michael carefully lowers something into the light. We see the small, tape-gripped pistol, which he cups gently in his hands. Outside, McCluskey glances up for a second time. Michael pauses just outside the stall. He rests his hands on his head, then smooths down his hair twice. He enters the dining room. The two men stop eating and stare at him. Michael returns a nonplussed look. They relax once again over their plates. Michael walks forward steadily and takes his seat. His unshaven face is drawn, his eyes wide. Michael nods.
Eglozzi, tu me capisci, no? Sei italiano come tuo padre?
We drift closer to Michael's dark, deliberating face.
Sta male. Quando tu sta meglio? Ricami di fa un più ognuno. E mettiamo tutto a posto.
His eyes move nervously, flitting from the tabletop to Salazzo's face and back again. His lower lip shudders as if to cry. He springs to his feet and aims, blowing a hole in Salazzo's forehead. He hits McCluskey in the throat, then again in the forehead. McCluskey clutches his collar, his head slams on the table. He upends the table on his way down. Two nearby diners stand up in shock, then rush away. On his way out, Michael lets the gun drop on the floor. From across the street, we see Michael hurry away from the restaurant. Inside, Salazzo's head arches backward over his chair. McCluskey lies in a heap, his bloody head tangled in the tablecloth. The scene dissolves to a spinning printing press. Now, a montage of fast-fading scenes. A bundle of newspapers with the headline, Police Hunt Cop Killer. Another headline, City Cracks Down, Pressure on Organized Crime. A glimpse of Tessio working on a crossword puzzle. A spinning newspaper, Police Captain Linked with Drug Racket. In a dark, bare-walled bedroom, Clemenza lies down on a cot. In a warehouse-like prison room, a dozen men eat dinner at an oblong table. Nearby, an elderly man with thinning hair plays a piano. Another newspaper headline rolls up on screen. Mobster Barzini questioned in underworld feud. Under it, the tan-faced Don from the wedding reception. Images of men passing a salad bowl are superimposed by the newsprint words, mob killing. Various black and white photographs. A police official smiles next to a body lying in a pool of blood on the floor of a diner. A body slumped against a fence. Another corpse in blood-soaked clothes. A Corleone man takes a drag of his cigar and moves away from a steel-grated window. Leftover spaghetti is dumped into a trash can. The rotund, bare-bellied Clemenza snoozes on his bedding. Now an article in a newspaper reads, Syndicate Big Shot Vito Corleone returns home. Below it, a photo of the tuxedoed patriarch. The scene changes to a small parking lot behind a prison. Two uniformed guards carrying rifles divert reporters away from a parked ambulance. Clemenza and the other Corleone men pile into two sedans. A group of white-dressed paramedics moves away from the ambulance. Several reporters lag behind, jotting notes. With the two guards watching, the ambulance drives away, flashing its three red lights. It descends a steep ramp and turns onto a street, escorted by a police car and the two sedans. At the Corleone residence, a small crowd has gathered inside the cast iron gates. A wide view of the white stretch ambulance as it passes a car on a flat country road. In her driveway, Mama Corleone and the grandchildren move closer to the gate. Later, paramedics carry a stretcher inside the house. One white-suited ambulance worker helps a family man carry Don Corleone upstairs as Fredo, Clemenza, Tom, and others watch. The whole family climbs the stairs after the stretcher. The little boy in Sonny's arms punches Clemenza in the chest. Now, a small black-haired girl at the Don's bedside.
I'm sorry, Pa, he doesn't know you yet.
Right. Sonny with his son.
Hey, big guy, give it to Grandpa.
I hope you get well, Grandpa, and I wish I would see you soon. Love your grandson, Frank.
Sonny lowers him for a kiss.
Go ahead, go what you want. Go ahead, take him downstairs.
Don Corleone feebly blows a kiss as well-wishers fall out of the room.
Go on, Carlo, you too. Go on.
Fredo, Sonny, Clemenza, Tessio, and Tom stay in the room. In the kitchen, Mama, Sandra, and Connie. Out by the gate, a guard throws a ball to some grandsons who play catch in the drive. In the dining room, Connie sees her husband sulking in a chair.
What's the matter with you, Carlo?
Shut up and sit at the table.
Upstairs, the Don's advisors stand around his bed. Holding his grandchildren's cards on his chest, Don Corleone opens his eyes and looks up at Tom. Tom adjusts his footing and leans a little closer.
Since McCluskey's killing, the police have been cracking down on most of our operations, and also the other families. There's been a lot of bad blood. They hit us, so we hit them back. Through our contacts in the newspapers, we've been able to put out a lot of material about McCluskey being linked with Salazzo and the drug rackets. You see, things are starting to loosen up. Then I sent Alfredo to Las Vegas under the protection of Don Francesco Valle. I want him to rest.
I'm going to learn the casino business.
Yeah.
Staring at them, Don Corleone mouths words. Tom strains to hear. The Don swallows painfully. Tom and Sonny exchange glances. Tom leans over a little more and gazes steadily at the Don.
It was Michael who killed Salazzo. But he's safe. He's starting to work to bring him back now.
Wincing, Don Corleone closes his eyes and shakes his head slowly on the pillow. He lifts a hand and makes one weak, dismissive wave. Tom hesitates, then walks out of the room. One by one, the others follow. On the stairs, Sonny turns to Tom.
I want you to find out what a little pin to tie his hide down on his ass now, right now.
Hey, Sonny, what? Things are starting to loosen up a little bit. If you go after the Calia, all hell's gonna break loose. Let the smoke clear. Pop can negotiate.
No, Pop can't do nothing till he's better. I'm gonna decide what's gonna go.
All right, but your war's costing us a lot of money. Nothing's coming in. We can't do business.
Well, neither can they. Don't worry about it.
They don't have our place.
Don't worry about it.
We can't afford a stalemate.
Well, then there ain't no more stalemate. I'm gonna end it by killing that old bastard. I'm gonna.
Yeah, you're getting a great reputation. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, you just do what I tell you to do. God damn it, if I had a wartime consigliere Sicilian, I wouldn't be in a shape.
Papagenko, look what I got. I didn't mean that. Mom made a little dinner Sunday.
Told her.
You know, niggas are having a good time with our policy banks up there in Harlem, driving them new Cadillacs, paying 50% on a bet.
I knew that was going to happen since I started making big money.
Well, Papa never talked business at the table in front of the kids.
Hey, shut up, Connie.
Hey, don't you ever tell her to shut up. You got that? Okay.
Don't interfere.
You know, Sonny, Tom, I'd like to talk to you maybe after dinner. I could be doing a lot more for the family.
We don't discuss business at the table.
Carlo stares at his plate. The scene shifts to Fredo, who slips into his father's room upstairs. He sits down sheepishly in a window seat next to a fruit basket. A close view of Don Corleone, staring aside mournfully, his grandchildren's cards still cradled to his chest. As he closes his eyes, the scene dissolves to a wide country pasture. A shepherd rounds up a herd of goats. Below a crest of high, rounded hills, we see three figures move across the horizon. Michael walks in the lead. He wears a tweed beret, button-down shirt, and vest. Behind him, two young bodyguards tote shotguns and wear ammunition belts. A dark green car pulls up. One rifleman opens the door for a portly man with kind eyes. I kiss your hand, Don Tomasino. The Don climbs out with difficulty as Michael approaches. Why are you so far from the house? You know I'm responsible to your father for your life. The bodyguards are here. It's still dangerous. We've heard from Santino in New York. Your enemies know you're here. Did Santino say when I can go back? Don Tomasino shakes his head gently. Not yet. It's out of the question. Where are you going now?
Corleone.
Take my car. Michael shakes his head. I want to walk.
Ancora.
Now, shifting views of Michael and the bodyguards crossing the scrubby, parched yellow hillside, then climbing the terraced edges of a small mountain. At its top, a bodyguard points to another hill.
Michele, Corleone.
We see a cluster of whitewashed stucco houses nestled on the hilltop. Later, they stroll down a narrow, curved street, hemmed in by a high stone wall. Michael asks, where have all the men gone? They're all dead from vendettas. There are the names of the dead. The bodyguard points to a placard of names hanging next to a poster of a red communist flag with a yellow hammer and sickle. The men enter a deserted plaza bordered by a run-down church. Nearby, an older man works on the facade of a dilapidated storefront. Now, on the outskirts of town, a bodyguard waves to passing U.S. Army jeeps.
Hey, hey, hey! Take me to the American GI! Clark Gable, hey! America! America! Va, take me to the American GI! Clark Gable, read them! Mannaggia, miseria, mannaggia!
Now, off a dirt path, the three men climb over a stone wall to admire an approaching group of young women and children. A curvaceous, brown-haired woman holding a basket and the hand of a child leads the group. One bodyguard looks toward heaven. Mamma mia, what a beauty.
Ma vado su per la montagna.
The young woman comes face to face with Michael, who stares into her eyes. She has a heart-shaped face and tanned olive skin. A bodyguard, I think you got hit by the thunderbolt. The woman narrows her eyes and spins back to the group. The guard nudges a dazed Michael. In Sicily, women are more dangerous than shotguns. The young woman keeps her eyes cautiously on Michael as the group walks away. Later, the men arrive at an outdoor cafe where a proprietor stands under the awning. The proprietor waves and approaches the men's table. Did you have a good hunt? A guard leans back in his chair. You know all the girls around here? We saw some real beauties. One of them struck our friend like a thunderbolt. The proprietor grins jovially. A bottle of wine arrives. She would tempt the devil himself. Goading them, the proprietor puts two fingers together side by side. A guard nods, really put together. The man nods, smiling, and with his hands traces the shape of an hourglass. The guard, such hair, such mouth. The girls around here are beautiful, but virtuous. This one had a purple dress and a purple ribbon in her hair. The smile passes from the proprietor's face. A type more Greek than Italian. Do you know her?
No.
He stands up, scowling. There's no girl like that in this town. The proprietor stomps inside. The guard. My God, I understand. Michael turns to the other guard. What's wrong? Let's go. The first guard sips his wine and says, it's his daughter. Michael points to the bar. Tell him to come here. Call him. Hesitating, the guard finally steps over to his chair, slings his shotgun over his shoulder, then disappears through a beaded curtain. The guard sitting next to Michael reaches for his gun. The proprietor appears in a huff, glaring down at Michael. Fabrizio, you translate. Legs crossed, Michael looks up at the owner.
I apologize if I offended you.
Ci dispiace se l'ho offeso.
I'm a stranger in this country.
Estraneo in questo paese.
And I meant no disrespect to you or your daughter.
E non voglio mancare di rispetto né a lei né a vostra figlia. E voi a chi sono? E chi parla di Meriglia?
I'm an American, hiding in Sicily.
Un americano che si è nascosto in Sicilia.
My name is Michael Corleone.
E si chiama Michele Corleone.
Are there people who pay a lot of money for that information?
Ci sarebbe parecchia gente che pagherebbe parecchie picciole per un'informazione così.
But then your daughter would lose a father.
Ma allora vostra figlia perderebbe un padre.
Instead of gaining a husband.
The guard gapes at Michael, who raises a finger subtly.
Invece di guadagnare uno sposo.
Ah, minchia, ma sei innamorato davvero, chissà.
I want to meet your daughter.
Vuole conoscere vostra figlia.
With your permission.
Con il suo permesso.
And under the supervision of your family.
E con il consenso di tutta la famiglia.
With all respect.
Con tutto il rispetto, naturalmente.
With a lighter expression, the man hitches up his suspenders, then looks at Michael.
Venite domenica.
Come to my house Sunday morning. My name is Vitelli.
Abito in campagna, vicino a Ciume.
Michael stands and shakes his hand. What's her name?
Come si chiama vostra figlia?
Apollonia.
Bene.
Michael's wide-eyed, smiling face dissolves to a weedy dirt driveway seen through a rusted iron gate. The white-shirted figure of Don Tomasino stands at the corner of a house. He watches as Michael gets into a low-riding black sedan. The driver, holding a plate of food, gets in after him. The car passes through the gate. Now, Michael shakes hands with other men inside a small stonewall patio. He wears a dark suit and carries an armload of gifts. Plates of food crowd a lace-covered table. Vitelli introduces Michael to a plump, balding man. The solemn-faced Apollonia appears on a sunny second-floor landing. Wearing a plain beige dress, she descends a stairway. Michael looks up at her calmly, then returns to his introductions. Apollonia, her almond-shaped eyes wary and alert, enters the patio and sits down next to her mother. She and Michael exchange a shy handshake. Michael hands her a small wrapped gift. Taking it, she looks toward her mother for approval. The older woman nods, and Apollonia unties the white bow. Michael watches her lift the chain of a gold necklace. Without smiling, she mouths the word, grazie. A sheepish Michael replies, a prego. Another day, Michael's car pulls up to Vitelli's outdoor cafe. Now he sits outside across from Vitelli at a long table filled with wine and relatives. Michael converses with Vitelli, gesturing once toward the blackened bruise under his left eye. Michael makes eye contact with Apollonia at the far end of the table. Staring at him, she fingers the three gold strands of her new necklace. Michael grins earnestly, causing the first smile to break across her lips. She lowers her eyes. The elderly women next to her chuckle and pretend not to notice. The scene dissolves to another afternoon. From behind, we see Michael and Apollonia walking together on a country path. Her hair is styled into a bun and she wears a black dress. She nearly stumbles on a rock in the path, but Michael quickly takes her arm to steady her. At that moment, a group of six elderly chaperones emerge in the foreground, following them down the path from a distance of about 50 feet. Taking up the rear are Michael's two bodyguards. Back in New York, two sharply dressed Corleone men play quarters on a sidewalk. Our view glides up the dark stairwell of a nearby building where other bodyguards are positioned at intervals. One reads a magazine. At the very top of the stairs, Sonny backs out of a door, the bridesmaid from the wedding in his arms. Wearing only a slip, she tweaks in between the legs. Sonny taps her cheek, then descends the stairs.
Save it for the library.
Collar unbuttoned, Sonny approaches a guard in the lobby.
Come on, we gotta go pick up my sister. Let's go.
The line of fedora-topped men follows him cautiously into the glare of the sunny street. Later, Connie opens her apartment door, then cowers against the wall, away from Sonny. We see bruises around her eyes and mouth.
What's the matter? Huh? What's the matter?
He turns her around, then bites his knuckle.
It was my fault!
Where is he?
Sonny, please, it was my fault. Sonny, it was my fault. I hit him. I started a fight with him. Please, Sonny. I didn't know. Sorry, please.
I'm just gonna give a doctor to come take a look at you.
Sonny, right? Please don't do anything. Please don't do it.
Okay. What's the matter with you? What am I gonna do? I'm gonna make that baby an orphan before he's born. Huh? Hmm? All right?
You Scott Slop still betting Yankees pretty heavy? Brand new ball game again. Tell the stuff taking action out, right? Last of all, 2-1. You lost enough money last week, I imagine.
Carlo sits on a stoop near a spouting fire hydrant. Sonny leaps out of his car with a baseball bat.
Oh, come in, come in, come here, come here.
He flings the bat, missing him, then catches Carlo in the street and throws him over a black iron fence. Pinning him against a brick wall, he belts him in the stomach and jaw. Sonny knees him viciously in the face. Carlo falls to his knees, where Sonny kicks his stomach repeatedly. Bodyguards keep the crowd at bay. Clutching a fistful of hair, Sonny punches his face. As Carlo grips the black railing, Sonny bites his fingers. But Carlo doesn't let go. Now frantic, Sonny tries to lift his leg, but ends up belting him with his own shoe instead. He lifts a garbage can and smashes him with it, then pounds Carlo's face with the garbage can lid. Carlo struggles onto the sidewalk, crawling into the fountain of water. With his black and white shoes, Sonny kicks Carlo all the way up to the open hydrant, where he rolls off the curb.
Touch my sister again, I'll kill you.
Gritting his teeth, Sonny turns back for one more kick to the head. Carlo's soaked, orange-clad body rolls into the gutter beside the hydrant. Sonny and his men march away through the ring of bystanders. Now dressed as bride and groom, Apollonia and Michael make the sign of the cross. They rise from their knees on the steps of a church. A small band of sailors leads the wedding procession through the narrow dirt streets of Corleone. Handfuls of rice rain down over the newlyweds. The white uniformed band marches out of view. Behind them, Michael's shotgun-toting bodyguards squint into the sunshine. Next in line, the black-suited Michael escorts his new wife in a lacy white gown and short veil. They both wear constrained, humble expressions. Farther back in the procession, several dark-suited men push Don Tomasino in a wheelchair. Now an aerial view of Corleone, its weathered villas and tiled roofs blending in with the bristly yellow hillside. From a distance, we see the procession descending one of the steep roads that crisscross the hillside. Michael walks with Apollonia on his arm. He bends down to grin at a small flower girl, who bows her head with a bashful smile. The scene changes to an outdoor veranda, where the guests are seated in a circle of chairs. Apollonia carries a ribboned basket to each guest, spooning white candies into their hands. Under the veil, her hair is looped in two wide braids that brush the top of her shoulders. Behind her, we see Michael serving his own tray of candies. Grinning radiantly, Michael takes Apollonia's hand and leads her into a waltz. They dance alone in the wide circle of wedding guests. She wears a glowing, unfaltering smile as he spins her gracefully around and around. Nighttime. Michael, tie off, collar unbuttoned, walks out of the shadows and slowly crosses a bedroom floor. Apollonia stands by the bed, waiting, and wears only a white, lace-trimmed slip. Her long brown hair falls in waves on her chest. Michael stands before her, gazing. She blinks her eyes and steps closer. With his fingertips, Michael cradles the sides of her face and tilts it toward him. Gently, he kisses her forehead. His lips trail softly across her cheek to her mouth. She places her hands on his shoulders and leans into his kiss. Stepping back slowly, eyes not leaving Michael, she crosses her arms over her chest and pulls down the straps of her slip. The silky white material rolls off to her waist, uncovering her creamy brown skin and round, pink-tipped breasts. Still staring into her eyes, Michael drifts closer, hands poised in midair. He slides them around her sides and inches her close. They kiss deeply as she wraps her arms around him. We see the glint of a wedding ring on her hand. Back in New York, at the Corleone Gate, a woman in a bright red raincoat gets out of an orange and yellow taxi. A guard opens the gate. From behind, we see the woman enter and approach a few other guards. Tom Hagen strides down the wet walkway, wringing his hands.
Hey! Weren't expecting you, Kay. You should call.
Yes, well, I have. I mean, I've tried writing and calling. Now, I want to reach Michael.
Nobody knows where he is. We know that he's all right, but that's all.
A car with a blown-off door.
What was that?
Well, that's an accident, but nobody was hurt.
Tom, will you give this letter to Michael, please? Please?
Well, if I accepted that, in a court of law, they could prove that I have knowledge of his whereabouts. Now, you just be patient, Kay. He'll get in touch with you, all right?
I let my cab go, so can I come in to call another one, please?
Come on, I'm sorry, come on.
With a warming smile, Tom escorts Kay up the walk. Her blonde hair is topped by an orange rain bonnet. Fade to black. Now, a comfortable beige apartment with a marble fireplace. Connie, wearing a silk maternity robe, enters.
Hello? Hello?
Is Carlo there?
Who's this?
This is a friend of Carlo's. Would you tell him that I can't make it tonight until later?
The pregnant Connie takes a shaky breath and hangs up. She crosses the living room to the bedroom, where Carlo is putting on an orange striped shirt.
Dinner's on the table.
I'm not hungry yet.
Food, it's on the table, it's getting cold.
I'll eat out later.
You just told me to make you dinner!
Hey, bafangul, huh?
Oh, bafangul, you!
She disappears into another room. Carlo fixes his shiny metallic necktie. In the kitchen, Connie hurls dishes, eggs, and dry spaghetti to the floor.
That's it, break it all, you spoiled guinea brat! Break it all!
In the dining room, she smashes and overturns plates of food.
Why don't you bring your whole up and dinner?
After dumping a pitcher of wine, she topples vase after vase on a display cabinet.
Now clean it up!
Oh my God! Clean it up!
He whips her with his belt.
Clean it up, I said! Clean it up!
She runs under a drape, then into the living room, slamming the French doors. Carlo corners her. She throws a rack of poker chips as Carlo thrashes her. In the kitchen, she grabs a carving knife.
Come on now, kill me! Be a murderer like your father! Come on, all you Corleones are my family! Come on, you... Come on, kill me!
Carlo knocks away the knife.
Get out of here!
I hate you!
Now, go ahead, now I'll kill you! You guinea brat, you...
He breaks open a bathroom door. We see it close behind him.
Connie, what's the matter? I can't hear you. What is it? Connie, talk louder. The baby's crying. Auntie, I can't understand. I don't know.
Yes, Connie.
Sonny holds a hand over his ear, straining to listen to the phone.
and you wait there. No, you just wait there. Son of a bitch! Son of a bitch!
What's the matter?
Son of a bitch!
Sonny storms outside.
Open the goddamn gate. Get off your ass.
He climbs into the driver's seat of a car. Tom Hagen and another man hurry out of the house. Doing a three-point turn in the driveway, Sonny swings the car back toward the front gate in a cloud of dust.
Sonny, come on, get out of here.
The car rips out of the driveway as three hired men scramble into a second car. The scene changes to a wide, flat country road. We see Sonny's car round a bend to approach a three-station toll booth. He is second in line. The booth attendant takes Sonny's dollar. The car in front of him doesn't move.
Son of a bitch.
The attendant shuts his window and ducks. Sonny looks around. Men with Tommy guns rise up from the other booth and swarm out of the car in front. Sonny's windshield shatters. The booth windows crumble as Sonny takes bullets on both sides of his body. Spattered with blood, he struggles out of the passenger's side. When he gets to his feet, bullets riddle his body in a gruesome dance. Blood streams over his face and teeth. Writhing against the car, he falls on his back. One man sprays a last salvo of bullets into Sonny's body, then kicks his head. The gunmen hightail it away from the scene. Behind the running men, we see Sonny's black car at the toll booth window, pockmarked with bullet holes. The booth near the car is torn to shreds. One headlight is completely shot away. We see a wide view of Sonny's body, on its back, slumped across the lane divider. The riddled passenger door hangs open. A black car rounds the corner to the toll booth and stops 50 yards away. One of Tom's men jumps out, looks, then rushes back inside. The scene dissolves to Tom Hagen, alone in Don Corleone's office. He sits motionless in a leather chair, a drink held to his chest. We move closer to him. The room is furnished in dark wood and rich oriental rugs. A figure appears at the doorway. Don Corleone, wearing pajamas and a bathrobe, walks slowly into the room. He sits down in a chair next to Tom. A low polished table with a phone rests between them. Tom turns and looks him straight in the eye. Tom hands him his glass of whiskey. The Don takes a small sip, his hair long and ragged, a bandage around his neck.
My wife is crying upstairs. I hear cars coming to the house. Consigliere mine. I think you should tell your Don what everyone seems to know.
I didn't tell Mama anything. I was about to come up and wake you just now and tell you.
But you needed a drink first.
Yeah.
Now you've had your drink.
Looking at him directly, Tom gives a slight nod.
They shot Sonny on the causeway. He's dead.
The Don's brow trembles. His face lowers into shadow as he bows his head. Chest heaving, he squeezes his eyes shut, draws his teary eyes heavenward, then weakly holds up a finger to Tom.
I want all inquiries made.
His jaw buckles and shakes.
I want no acts of vengeance. I want you to arrange a meeting with the heads of the five families. This war stops now.
Don Corleone gets up heavily from his chair. He puts a hand on Tom's back as the young man sheepishly buries his forehead against his side. Don Corleone rubs Tom's back lightly, then walks past the phone.
Call Bronson. We need him now.
The Don walks slowly out of the room and into the foyer, leaving Tom behind with the phone.
This is Tom Hagen. I'm calling Vito Corleone at his request. Now, you owe your Don a service. He has no doubt that you will repay it. Now, he will be at your funeral parlor in 1 hour. Be there to greet him.
A view of the Petite Bonacera through the door of a descending elevator. Two men leave the elevator carrying a covered stretcher. Tom Hagen and the dark-eyed Don exit after them. Don Corleone takes off his hat as he tiredly approaches the waiting man. He looks down at him with a twisted frown.
Well, my friend, are you ready to do me the service?
Yes. What do you want me to do?
A haggard Don Corleone moves to the side of the covered stretcher and turns to look at Bonacera.
I want you to use all your powers and all your skills. I don't want his mother to see him this way.
He lifts the corner of the blanket. We see a partial view of Sonny, the blood caked on his face. The undertaker's eyes widen. Don Corleone, his face awash in shadows, gazes at the body of his son. His high forehead twists and wrinkles.
Look how they mask with my boy.
His eyebrows arch and tremble. His lips curl upward in a smile-like grimace of grief. Now, Apollonia in a driver's seat. She eagerly steers a car as Michael, sitting next to her, corrects the wheel. From overhead, we see the car cruising about Tomasino's circular dirt driveway. It comes to a stop near an island of grass, and Michael gets out. It's safer to teach you English. I know English. A dark green car pulls into the driveway. Michael approaches it. Greetings, Don Tomasino. How are things in Palermo? The portly guardian labors out of the car and shakes his head. Apollonia dances up to him. Michael is teaching me to drive. Watch, I'll show you. How are things in Palermo? Young people don't respect anything anymore. Times are changing for the worse. This place has become too dangerous for you. I want you to move to a villa near Siracusa, right now. Michael puts a hand on his shoulder. What's wrong? Don Tomasino frowns. Bad news from America. Your brother Santino, they killed him. Michael, unmoving, lowers his eyes. Apollonia behind the wheel. Let's go, you promised. Looking back at his wife, Michael gradually turns back to Don Tomasino. He looks his guardian in the eye, then grimly turns away. The guardian sadly touches his shoulder. Later, Michael appears on a balcony, buttoning his cuff.
Fabrizio!
Yes, sir.
Prepare la macchina.
Get the car.
Are you driving yourself, boss?
Yes.
Is your wife coming with you?
No, I want you to take her to her father's house, so I know things are safe.
Okay, anything you say, boss.
Fabrizio strides away. Moments later, Michael visits a bunkhouse where the other bodyguard is eating a meal.
Callo,
where is Apollonia?
Anda, macchina. Avrai una sorpresa.
She's going to surprise you. She wants to drive. She'll make a good American wife. Michael smiles and leaves. Wait, I'll get the baggage. Later, out by the car, Callo loads up the trunk with luggage. Michael sees Fabrizio slipping out a side gate.
Fabrizio.
Where are you going?
Dove vai?
Michele, aspettami lì.
Wait there, I'll drive to you. Michael looks at Fabrizio, who runs around a corner, then at the car.
No! No, I belong to you!
Michael is thrown backward as fire consumes the car. The roof is reduced to a black skeleton. Orange flames lick the smoke-filled sky. Fade to black. Now our view scans the facade of a giant tan brick building in New York City. Inside, dark-suited men sit at a large round table.
Don Bassini, I want to thank you for helping me organize this meeting here today. And also the other heads of the five families in New York, New Jersey. Carmine Cuneo from the Bronx and Brooklyn. Philip Tattaglia from Staten Island. We have with us Victor Strachey and all the other associates who came as far as from California, Kansas City, and all the other territories of the country. Thank you.
Tom helps Don Corleone into his seat. He holds his hands wide as if to shrug.
How did things ever get so far? I don't know. It was so unfortunate, so unnecessary. Italia lost a son. I lost a son. We're quits. And if Italia agrees, then I'm willing to let things go on the way they were before.
Barzini.
We're all grateful to Don Corleone for calling this meeting. We all know him as a man of his word. A modest man. He'll always listen to reason.
Yes, Don Barzini. He's too modest. He had all the judges and politicians in his pocket. He refused to share them.
When did I ever refuse an accommodation? All of you know me here. When did I ever refuse? Except one time. And why? Because I believe this drug business is going to destroy us in the years to come. I mean, it's not like gambling or liquor, even women, which is something that most people want nowadays, and it's forbidden to them by the Pizzinavanti of the church. Even the police departments that have helped us in the past with gambling and other things are going to refuse to help us when it comes to narcotics. And I believed that then, and I believe that now.
Times have changed. It's not like the old days, where we can do anything we want. A refusal is not the act of a friend. If Don Corleone had all the judges and the politicians in New York, then he must share them. All he loved is use them. He must let us draw the water from the well. Certainly he can present a bill for such services. After all, we are not communists.
I also don't believe in drugs. For years, I paid my people extra so they wouldn't do that kind of business. Somebody comes to them and says, I have powders. If you put up $3,000-$4,000 investment, we can make $50,000 distributing. So they can't resist. I want to control it as a business, to keep it respectable. I don't want it near schools. I don't want it sold to children. That's an infamia. In my city, we would keep the traffic in the dark, people to call it. They're animals anyway, so let them lose their souls.
Our view moves from Don Corleone to the pudgy mustached Bruno Tattaglia, who shifts in his seat.
I hope that we could come here and reason together. And as a reasonable man, I'm willing to do whatever's necessary to find a peaceful solution to this problem.
Then we are agreed. The traffic in drugs will be permitted, but controlled. And Don Corleone will give her protection in the East, and there will be the peace.
But I must have strict assurance from Corleone. As time goes by and his position becomes stronger, will he attempt any individual vendetta?
Look, we are all reasonable men here. We don't have to give assurances as if we were lawyers.
You talk about vengeance. Is vengeance going to bring your son back to you? Or my boy to me? I forgo the vengeance of my son. But I have selfish reasons. My younger son was forced to leave this country. Because of this Salazzo business. All right. I have to make arrangements to bring him back here safely. Clear of all these false charges. But I'm a superstitious man.